Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
What's up, you guys? I'm Haley.
And I'm Andrea.
And this is Inhuman, a true crime podcast. Hey. Welcome back, everybody. Today, we are going to be talking about the crimes of somebody known as the Black Widow. That was what she was named in the media after her crime spree made national news. And this was suggested by one of our listeners and was actually relevant to a recent story that I heard about and covered on TikTok. And so I'm going to be talking about that as a part of this case as well.
Okay.
So let's get into it. Stacey Daniels was born in Clay, New York, on July 24, 1967, to Jerry Daniels and Judy Eaton. Not a lot is known about her childhood and upbringing, but we do know that she met her first husband, Michael Wallace, when she was 17 years old.
Okay.
So the couple got married in 1985, and they had two daughters, Ashley and Bree, in 1988 and 1991. So Stacy was 20 and 23 years old when she had her daughters. Stacy was working at for an ambulance dispatch company during the day, and then Michael worked nights as a mechanic. So their family dynamic was not the best, in part because they had opposite schedules, so they didn't really get to see each other that often.
That's really hard because, especially when you're like young and you're kind of newlyweds and
with young kids.
So like your whole focus is pretty much going to work and taking care of the kids, which is the reality. But, you know, it's a season of life. So
very difficult. And what made it even worse was that they were struggling financially. So even though they were both working, they were still struggling financially. So that just puts even more strain on a marriage and on a family.
Yeah, and that's unfortunate because it sounds like they both had, you know, pretty decent jobs.
They were trying. I mean, they were doing everything they could to make things work, but unfortunately, they were still struggling. And it got even worse because the couple each started showing favoritism towards one of the daughters. So reportedly, Michael was super close with Bree, the younger daughter, and he was like favoring spending time with her and treating her quote unquote better. So then to make up for this, Stacy became best friends with Ashley, the older daughter. And it just kind of made the couple grow further apart.
Yeah.
And it's also rumored that they were both having affairs. This isn't confirmed, but just another rumor. Okay. And they were considering separating and getting divorced, but before they could, tragedy would strike the family.
Oh no.
Sometimes when I don't feel like reading or watching TV, I just want to sit back and play a fun game on my phone. And I recently started playing June's Journey, and when I tell you I'm loving it, that is an understatement. I'm already on the fourth chapter, and I've only been playing for a few days. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game, and I love it because it brings out my inner detective. You play as June Parker in the 1920s trying to solve her sister's murder. It's so much fun to travel the world of the 20s looking for clues that are indicating that June's family has some dark secrets. You also get to create and decorate your own estate island, which I loved because it made me feel really fancy and important. In my last chapter, I discovered a big family secret and there was an unexpected death, but I won't ruin it for you. You can discover your inner detective and play yourself by downloading June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android. You can find the link to download June's Journey for free in the show notes of this episode. In the winter of 1999, Michael began randomly feeling sick with no explanation. And his symptoms were pretty random. He would be like coughing uncontrollably. He would lose his balance and be unsteady. And he also looked really swollen.
And he would go to the doctor and they like couldn't figure out.
Yeah. So doctors couldn't figure out what was wrong. He told them he felt drunk, but he had nothing to drink. So they were considering that it was possibly like an inner ear thing, because that can really throw off your balance. Yeah. I mean, that can throw off so much in your body.
It can make your eyes do weird things. And
That's what they were thinking. But his daughter Ashley would later recall, quote, he was having a hard time walking and he was having a hard time talking. At one time, he sat up and he just vomited across the coffee table and laid back down and went back to sleep like nothing ever happened.
Oh my gosh, that's terrifying for her, very scary. Especially as a child, seeing your father go through that. And then
she was like 11, 12 years old.
Wow.
Yeah. So this was really scary for everybody, and doctors couldn't really figure out what was wrong. There was no definitive answers. But before they could get those definitive answers, on January 11th, 2000, Michael passed away at the age of 38 years old.
Wow. That is insane.
Yeah. It was later said that he died from a heart attack.
I mean, that's a little young, and I mean, it does happen, but you would think that they, I mean, it's tough because in my mind, I'm like, I think I know where this is going. So
right, because
why would
you
not look into other things, like even like mold poisoning, just regular,
that's
like
a good point. Yeah.
In your house, mold poisoning can cause all of those symptoms that you just described. So
yeah, so that's a good point.
That they just kind of closed the book and was like heart attack, even though he was probably healthy, young, no reason for him to be having a heart attack at 38.
Yep. But they did. They just closed the book on it. And Michael's sister was skeptical about him dying from a heart attack.
Yeah.
And she thought there was something more going on. And she requested for an autopsy to be done, which makes sense. Young person dies from a heart attack. Let's do an autopsy and see what happened.
Yeah.
But Stacy, his wife, refused and said she believed the doctors were correct that he had a heart attack.
And unfortunately, because she is the... next of kin. She has the rule as the spouse.
And she ended up collecting a $55,000 life insurance policy after her husband's death. And I want to point out, because this is a true crime podcast, because most of us can tell where the story's going, it's like very obvious, but it seems more obvious, but in the moment it probably wasn't. Like, it's not as easy to put all of this together in the moment. Hindsight's 2020.
And it's the what, early 90s? Mid
90s? 1999.
Oh, okay. So late 90s. So, okay. They should maybe.
But still,
there should be somebody that's like, red flag.
Yeah. But also, like, you know, true crime now is such a big genre that so many people are aware of. Back then, it was not like that.
Nothing
so
like that,
even that aspect
like
of
2020.
It.
2020.
Yeah, exactly.
Dateline.
Yeah. So Michael passed away, and in 2001 Stacy met another man, and 3 years later she was able to move on. So in 2003 she married David Castor, who owned an air conditioning installation and repair company. And Stacy's boss apparently introduced her and David. I've seen that in some sources, and then some sources say Stacy worked as an office manager at the company. So I think maybe her boss knew the owner, David, and introduced them.
Okay. That makes sense.
The couple got married. There was a little bit of contention with Stacy's daughters not being like thrilled that she was getting remarried. But, know, their father had passed away. It's not like they had just gotten divorced. Like, their father had passed away. So it was definitely hard for them. But they seemed happy by all accounts. And unfortunately, just 2 years into their marriage, tragedy would strike the family. On August 22nd, 2005, Stacy called the sheriff's office, called 911 basically, to report that she hadn't heard from her husband in a day and she was concerned. She said the night before, the two had gotten into an argument and David had gone and locked himself in the bedroom. Apparently had taken a bottle of Southern Comfort, gone into the bedroom and locked himself in there. And she said that she assumed he was sleeping, and it was later reported that she told a friend that she knew he was sleeping because when she put her ear up to the door, she could hear him sleeping. Which, like, maybe you could hear him like snoring,
but,
I guess,
but also, like, you're going to call the police and be like, I haven't seen my husband in a day. He's in our bedroom?
Yeah, he's locked in our bedroom. Yeah.
That's bizarre. Okay.
Now, she did say she was worried because he suffered with depression after his father had passed away. Mm. So she was kind of worried about him.
Okay.
Sergeant Robert Willoughby was the responding officer, and he arrived to conduct a wellness check on David. When David didn't respond to him knocking on the door, he kicked in the locked door. And that's when he found David lying on the floor, dead.
Oh my gosh.
Near his body was two glasses, one that was half full of a bright green substance. They also found an open container of antifreeze, which, if you didn't know, is bright green.
Yeah, that was what I was about to say. The antifreeze mm-hmm. is bright green, but why would he drink? Mm-hmm. Why he took, quote unquote, took his own life, I'm assuming.
Mm-hmm. With antifreeze.
But that is like, yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very painful way to go, I would think.
Yes, it is. And I explain a little bit about antifreeze poisoning in a minute. Yeah. So when Stacy saw David, she apparently screamed, "He's not dead. He's not dead." Like, shocked, mm-hmm. quote unquote. David's cause of death was initially ruled as a suicide. He had poisoned himself with antifreeze. So Stacy told investigators that David was depressed following the death of his father and that he had recently been watching a news report about a woman named Lynn Turner who is infamous for murdering two of her lovers by poisoning them with antifreeze. So Stacy was like, this must have given him the idea to take his life that same way.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Thankfully, investigators were immediately suspicious of Stacy. So they started looking more into David's death. They actually did a little bit more of an investigation, and that's when they found evidence suggesting that Stacy was the one who had poisoned him.
Okay.
Investigators not only found Stacy's fingerprints on the antifreeze glass that was found on the bedside table, but they also found a turkey baster in the trash can of the house that had David's DNA on the tip of it and had traces of antifreeze inside it. So the glass you could explain away because, like, it's a glass in your home.
In your home, yeah.
Your fingerprints are going to be on it. A turkey baster that's in the trash can after he locked himself in the bedroom with the antifreeze.
With his DNA on it.
With his DNA on the tip of it, indicating like it was put into his mouth and antifreeze inside, that's a little more damning.
Yeah.
So they were looking into Stacy's being involved in David's death, and they also began learning about the mysterious death of her first husband, Michael.
Hmm. That'll do it.
Yeah. Stacy had David buried right next to Michael. Which is like,
what?
Yeah. But okay. Also, it's like, it's your husband. So, like, if you want to be near both of them.
Mm-mm, no. The only way I could, like, justify that any kind of way is if you, like, already had purchased the burial plots and you just are using it out of convenience. But that is just weird to me to bury that.
The reason I get it is if you had purchased, like, a bunch for your family.
Yeah.
And you want to be next to both of your husbands because you love them both. Like, I don't know.
But did she?
Yeah, well, that's in this site, probably not.
Yeah.
But because of this, investigators wanted to see if she was going to visit their gravesites, because if she truly loved them, like she said she did, she would probably visit their graves.
Yeah.
So they obtained visual surveillance of the grave sites and of Stacy's home, and they also wiretapped her phone.
Okay. I do want to just say, though, that, like, that's not always the best way to judge if somebody loves somebody, because
yeah, I agree.
I know people who, like, couldn't even go to their own loved ones' funerals because it was, like, just too hard. So,
right.
You know, that's not maybe the best, but
yeah.
I would say bugging it and, like, maybe catching her saying some out-of-pocket shit
yeah.
might be a good plan, but yeah.
Definitely not the most telling.
Yeah.
But she never visited, so that was, you know, they definitely were like, that's suspicious.
Yeah.
Investigators were convinced that Stacy was responsible for the deaths of both of her husbands. So they had Michael Wallace's body exhumed so that they could finally perform that autopsy.
Nice.
In that autopsy, toxicology ruled that Michael had not died from a heart attack, but that he had died from, you guessed it,
antifreeze poisoning. Wow.
So that's what it caused him to get so sick and what had ultimately led to his death. Now, according to Healthline, symptoms of antifreeze poisoning can include headache, fatigue, lack of coordination, grogginess, slurred speech, and nausea and vomiting. All things that Michael was experiencing.
Right.
So basically, antifreeze has chemicals in it. And when those chemicals enter your body, they crystallize in your organs. Mm-hmm. So, or they create crystals in your organs. So as your body breaks down the antifreeze, the toxic substances form, such as glycolic acid, acetone, and formaldehyde.
Wow.
And that is what leads to organ damage. So, you know, damage to all different organs. But right. The substance can also interfere with the function of your kidneys, your lungs, your brain, and your nervous system.
And I would imagine your heart, right?
Heart.
Because that's
yep.
probably why they were like, oh, he had a heart attack, because it
yep.
affected his heart. So unrelated, but kind of related. My aunt and uncle, they live in North Carolina, and they had, like, I think it was 2 or 3 of their dogs poisoned.
Oh my gosh.
By antifreeze. And they found out, like, it was someone in the neighborhood that had done it. But
oh my gosh.
Yeah. It was really, really bad. And it was obviously very sad for yeah. everybody, because those poor dogs didn't deserve anything like
no.
that. But
holy,
I just remember
shit.
Them saying, like, all the horrible, like, side
yeah.
effects that they, and they knew right away, like, what it was.
What it
so.
Was. Wow.
And my parents oh. actually had one of their dogs get poisoned with antifreeze while they were at a boarding.
Oh my gosh.
What is it called? A boarding house?
Just like boarding. Like
yeah.
they were getting boarded.
Yeah. They were visiting me in Virginia, and they had boarded their puppy pretty much.
Oh my
I
God.
Mean, he was bigger. He wasn't like a teeny tiny little puppy, but he was pretty small. He wasn't full grown at all. And somebody came in and poisoned like several of the animal. I know, like, what the fuck is wrong
with
people?
What the fuck is wrong with people?
Yeah, I don't know, but
he
sadly passed away too, and it was really sad.
That's so sad. Wow.
Yeah, so don't fucking do that.
No. Leave animals alone.
Yeah.
Like, they're innocent. I mean,
so
are people, but
when people get poisoned now, like you were mm-hmm. saying at the top of the episode, like, you're not gonna get away with it.
Mm-mm. No. Oh, geez. Well, now investigators knew that Michael had died from antifreeze poisoning, and now David died from quote unquote suicide by antifreeze poisoning. In September 2007, which was about 2 years after David's death, Stacy learned that investigators had exhumed Michael's body and found traces of antifreeze in his system. Mm. She began to panic, and she devised one of the most evil plans you could imagine.
Don't tell me that she did anything to hurt kids. Please don't tell me that.
You'll see.
No.
So investigators, after exhuming Michael's body, interviewed Stacy about David's death and Michael's death, but particularly David's, because that was like the open investigation.
Right.
They were asking seemingly harmless and blameless questions, and at one point they asked which of the glasses on David's bedside table she had poured cranberry juice in, because there was cranberry juice in one of them and she had said she had given him cranberry juice. Mm. Her answer was, quote, "Well, when I poured the antifreeze, I mean the cranberry juice."
Oh, girl.
Mm-hmm. She claimed that she just misspoke, but yeah. At that point, she ended the interview and started saying the detectives were trying to frame her.
Okay, you can have a slip of the tongue, especially if you're, like, talking or thinking about something. Like, that's happened to me before, but the fact yeah. that she did pour the antifreeze in there, mm-hmm. and they obviously knew that she did this,
mm-hmm.
that was very telling. And, yeah, she probably did end the interview.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So after this, she was panicking, and that's when she decided that she was going to frame her 20-year-old daughter, Ashley, for the murders of both of her husbands, aka Ashley's father and stepfather.
That's, yeah, evil, like you said.
Yeah. So Ashley was away on her first day of college for the year, and investigators showed up to her school to tell her that they had learned her father had been poisoned. And they said that they wanted to question her about his death, mostly just because they were investigating this.
Right. Not because they believed her mother, hopefully.
Right. And at this point, her mother wasn't even trying to frame her yet.
Oh, okay.
So police questioned Ashley about her father's death, and this was obviously stressful. She was distraught, so she called her mom to get comfort, and Stacy, being a loving mother, invited Ashley to come have a drink together, to come home. She was like, "We've had a hard day, let's have a drink, talk things through." So that night, Ashley went home to Liverpool, New York. Stacy offered her a drink, and she was kind of like somewhat excited because she wasn't 21 yet. So she was like, "Oh, cool. Mom's letting me drink." But oh, it also was kind of weird because her mom had never done that before.
No.
Ashley ended up getting really tired after having this drink and going to bed. The next day, she woke up with a hangover. And then that night, Stacy was like, "Let's have another drink. It's been a tough couple of days. Let's have another drink." This drink was, quote, "nasty tasting." And Ashley initially refused, but she ended up drinking it, and probably because her mom was like, "Oh, it's just alcohol, like it just doesn't taste great." And her mom actually gave her a straw and said, "Put the straw at the back of your throat to drink it."
It's not that serious. Like, she doesn't need to drink it that bad.
I know. And like, at first, when I first read this, I was like, why the hell would she drink it? But I mean, alcohol doesn't taste great. And if you've never had alcohol before or had it very few times, you're not 21 yet, so you're not out drinking all the time. Yeah. You don't know what alcohol tastes like. You're probably just like, oh, like I've heard alcohol can be nasty. Yeah. Yeah, like you don't know.
Yeah.
So Ashley drank this beverage that her mother made for her, and it once again made her tired, so she went to lie down. 17 hours later, Ashley's sister, Bree, went into her bedroom to find Ashley lying in her bed, unresponsive. Mm. Bree demanded that Stacy call 911 because obviously something was wrong. The detective on the case later said, quote, "Stacy relayed to the 911 dispatcher that Ashley had consumed alcohol and quite a few doses of medications."
Mm.
While waiting for 911 or paramedics to come, Bree left Ashley's side for just a moment. And when she returned, she found a suicide note lying next to her. This was a 750-word typewritten note, and it contained a supposed confession to the murders of her father and stepfather.
So unresponsive Ashley got up, found the note, or wrote the note in 2 minutes, mm-hmm. and then printed it off, or I don't know if it was handwritten, you said?
Typewritten.
Okay, so she mm-hmm. printed it off and then passed back out.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Apparently. So Stacy immediately grabbed the note saying Ashley must have been so upset over what she'd done and tried to take her own life.
No.
She also made it very clear on the 911 call that there was a suicide note.
Of course she did.
Yeah. Ashley was taken to the hospital. And when she woke up, she was told, "We found the note of your confession. We know that you tried to take your own life. We want to talk to you." She had a potentially fatal dose of painkillers in her system, and had she not been taken to the hospital when she was, she would have died. It was said she was 15 minutes from death.
Oh my gosh.
And this was 17 hours after she went to lie down.
And this was the second night.
Mm-hmm.
So either she attempted to kill her and failed,
mm-hmm.
or she was...
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's pretty much the only explanation.
Yeah, or she was like slowly trying to poison her.
Yeah.
Thankfully, Ashley survived and was treated and was in the hospital recovering. And she immediately told police she did not write that note. She did not make that confession. Ashley said that the last thing she remembered was her mom made her that alcoholic drink that didn't taste very good. And she also said, you know, this wasn't normal because Stacy had never let her daughter drink alcohol before.
Right.
And Ashley was confused why the police were asking her questions about her father and stepfather's death, because she said she never wrote that note. She didn't murder anybody. She didn't do anything.
Was she even around, or was she in school when obviously when her father passed away, she was living at home, but.
Right. I think she was at home, or at least around when David died.
Okay.
But when Michael died, she was 11 or 12 years old.
Wow. So sick.
You don't poison someone at 11 or 12 years old.
No, you don't even know. You don't even know that those things can hurt. I mean, you do, but like, you're not like thinking that. Like, oh, let me go get this antifreeze to kill my father.
Right. Exactly. No. After police talked to Ashley, they determined that what they suspected was true. So that same day, Stacy Castor was arrested and charged with the second-degree murder of David Castor and the attempted murder and framing of Ashley Wallace.
Wow.
Stacy claimed her innocence, maintaining that she had nothing to do with her husband's deaths or her daughter's poisoning. But the evidence against her was proving otherwise.
Yeah, just the circumstantial evidence is like,
mm-hmm.
obviously, this bitch did it.
So at her trial, prosecutors had a lot of evidence. So first of all, they proved that both Michael and David had died from antifreeze poisoning. In both David and Michael's autopsies, the growth of the crystals in their kidneys was enough to prove that they had died from the antifreeze.
Mm-hmm.
Prosecutors also argued that David's suicide, quote-unquote suicide, never made sense with the physical evidence because his fingerprints were nowhere on the glass of antifreeze or on the container of antifreeze. And then that turkey baster that we talked about earlier pointed to somebody putting that into his mouth.
Right.
Ashley took the stand at her mother's trial and testified that she had never written the suicide note and that she didn't murder her father and stepfather. Like I said, she was 11 or 12 years old at the time of her father's death. Very unlikely that an 11-year-old would come and, like, murder somebody with antifreeze.
Right.
She testified that on the day that she came home from school, her mother had convinced her to drink that nasty tasting drink, and she only drank it because she trusted her mom. Even further, investigators found several drafts of the suicide note on Stacy's computer. Of course, Ashley could have used the computer and written the drafts, but timestamps on the files of the drafts showed that they had been written while Ashley was away at school.
This lady's not smart.
No. The computer also only had Stacy's fingerprints on it.
Oh.
And then something that prosecutors saw or presented as even more damning against Stacy that I honestly don't think it's the most, but I'll talk about it anyway.
Okay.
The word antifreeze in the suicide note was written 4 separate times as antifree. So remember how I said in that interview, she said, I poured the antifree, I mean cranberry juice?
Yeah.
Now, the transcript of that interview makes it sound like she cut herself off, but it's also possible that she thought it was called antifree, not antifreeze. And then that's why it was written as antifree in the note.
Oh my gosh.
So prosecutors pointed to this being like she was the one who
wrote
it. It
was definitely her, yeah. I mean, yeah, I can
see. Again, it's hard to say because it's like she might have just cut herself off, but also we don't have the tape of the interview. So maybe she really did like say it like, I poured the antifree. Oh, I mean cranberry juice. Like if she said it like that, then yeah, she used it.
Because obviously she thought it was spelt that way because that's how she spelt it.
Right. So it's very possible she thought that's how it was said. Yeah. And then the nail in the coffin, in my opinion, prosecutors said that Stacy had killed her husband for their life insurance money. So as I said earlier, she got a $55,000 payout when Michael died. But even more damning, prior to David's death, she had gone and changed his will to exclude his son from his previous marriage.
Oh.
So when he died and his will was executed, everything went to Stacy and her daughters, his stepdaughters, and nothing to his son.
Yeah, that's not a good look.
Yeah. So she got a $300,000 payout slash estate because of David's death. And this gave prosecutors motive. Stacy Kessler's defense was focused on creating reasonable doubt. So they really wanted to just poke holes in Ashley's story and create enough doubt that Stacy couldn't be convicted.
That's so messed up. I mean, I know that's their job.
That's their job. That's what they have to do. But
gosh, that poor girl. Like, she's been through so much. Like, her dad got killed. She almost got killed.
Yeah.
By her
and now
mother.
She's being framed.
And now she's being framed.
Yeah. Ugh. So the defense claimed that David had shown favoritism to Ashley's sister, Bree, and that Ashley had a not great relationship with her stepfather. Mm-hmm. So she must have become jealous and upset.
Yeah,
and murdered him.
I mean, isn't that what all young girls and young men do when they
away? Yeah, totally. The defense also had a pharmaceutical expert testify to try to cast doubt on the claim that Stacy had attempted to murder Ashley by drugging her, but it doesn't seem like this did much good. And then Stacy took the stand in her own defense.
Never a good idea.
No. But she wanted to maintain that she was innocent. She was not the one who killed David and Michael, that it was her daughter, Ashley. And then she claimed that she didn't want to speculate about the motive because Ashley was mentally ill.
Oh, that's new.
Mm-hmm. So she didn't want to speculate about her daughter's motive.
But she speculated.
Right. But on cross-examination, District Attorney William Fitzpatrick cast a ton of doubt on her story. So first of all, he pointed out that Ashley had never exhibited any signs of mental illness. And if Stacy was so concerned about her daughter's mental health, why had she not sought therapy or other help for her?
Yeah, good point.
It was also troublesome that Stacy had not sought medical attention for David or Ashley earlier than she had. So Fitzpatrick pointed out that Stacy had worked for an ambulance company and would have been aware of the need for early intervention had they been attempting to take their lives.
Right.
For Michael, her first husband, he was having all these weird symptoms, stumbling around, nonstop vomiting, but Stacy had not done anything saying he looked okay. for David, she was concerned that he was depressed, but after he locked himself in the bedroom, she waited an entire day to call 911.
Yeah.
And for Ashley, it was 17 hours of her being passed out in her room before Stacy called 911, and she only did so because her other daughter, Bree, found Ashley and was like, you have to do this. Stacy continued to maintain her innocence throughout the trial, which lasted for 4 weeks, but thankfully, the jury saw right through her. On February 5th, 2009, Stacy Castor was found guilty of the second-degree murder of David Castor and of the attempted second-degree murder of Ashley Wallace. Which is so frustrating that it's second-degree murder because she clearly planned this, but maybe they couldn't prove the plan enough, so they just went for second-degree. She was also charged and convicted of filing a fake will to inherit David Castor's $300,000 estate, and for that, she was sentenced to a year and a third. It was so weird. The sentence was like a year and a third to 4 years in prison, which is really weird to say.
Yeah.
Chief Assistant District Attorney Christine Garvey asked Judge Fahey to impose the maximum sentence for each of the murder charges in consecutive sentences. She cited the brutality of David's death and also the fact that Stacy had, quote, partied in her backyard with friends like nothing was happening while Ashley was comatose in her room.
Oh my God.
Garvey said, quote, she is cold, calculating, and without any emotion for what she has done.
Yeah.
Human life is sacred. Stacy Castor places no value on human life, not even her own flesh and blood. To Stacy Castor, human beings are disposable.
Yeah. Oh, she's right.
At the sentencing hearing, David's son, the one that Stacy had taken off his will, read a victim impact statement saying, quote, Your Honor, Stacy Castor is a monster and a threat to society. She has created so much pain and death with this, creating multiples of pain and death in the families of those she has hurt. Judge Fahey told Stacy Castor that she was in a class all by herself, saying he had never seen a parent attempt to murder their child in an attempt to cover up a crime they committed.
Yeah, that's pretty sick.
Mm-hmm. For the murder of David, Stacy was sentenced to the maximum of 25 years to life. For the attempted murder of Ashley, she was sentenced to the maximum of 25 years. She would be required to serve 51 years before she would even become eligible for parole. And since she was 42 years old at the time of her sentencing, this was effectively a life sentence because her earliest possible release date would be June 15th, 2055, a month before her 88th birthday.
Wow. So I guess they didn't try her for Michael's murder?
They did not. And I think it's because he technically, his death was never ruled a murder. Even though they found it, they probably just didn't want to push
it. They knew that she was going to get
a
maximum sentence or, you know, a hefty sentence. So I guess that was justice enough. I don't know.
Yeah. And had she not been convicted, they might have tried to do that. But
yeah.
Yeah.
That's smart, though, because I feel like we covered another case recently where they didn't try one of the murders in case somehow the person got off and they would at least have that, you know, murder trial to fall back on.
Yeah, exactly. Stacy's attorneys claim they would try to appeal her conviction mainly on the basis of the prosecution presenting evidence about Michael Wallace's death during the trial, even though she was never officially charged with that. But from everything I can find, no appeals were ever successful. After her mother's conviction, Ashley Wallace shared the following statement. I never knew what hate was until now. Even though I do hate her, I still love her at the same time. That bothers me. It is so confusing. How can you hate someone and love them at the same time? I just wish that she would say sorry for everything she did, including all the lies. As horrible as it makes me feel, this is a goodbye, Mom. As hard as you tried, I survived, and I will survive because now I'm surrounded by people that love me. I'm going to do good things in this world despite making me, in every sense of the word, an orphan.
Wow, that is impactful.
I know,
and
right?
And that is, I mean, gosh, that is so confusing because, like, your intuition is to love your mother unconditionally, mm-hmm. you know? And,
yeah.
And your mother is supposed to love you unconditionally, but when your mother tries to take your life, I mean.
Yeah.
That's like.
How can you? But you also can't just. Yeah. But you also can't just go from loving your mother to just hating her.
Yeah.
Like that, you know, like without still having that love. Yeah. So. But Ashley's very strong to have said that to her and taking care of herself.
Mm-hmm.
Both Ashley and Bree cut off contact with their mother after she was convicted. Ashley said, I would have done anything for her, but she tried to kill me instead.
Yeah, because they were like best friends.
Mm-hmm. Bree said, I was happy that they said she was guilty because we all know that she's guilty.
Yeah.
Stacey Castor never apologized to either of her daughters. And even after her conviction, she continued to maintain her innocence. Like I said at the top of the episode, she was dubbed the Black Widow by the media, but she said, I'm not guilty. Stacey's mother, Judy Eaton, also believes in her daughter's innocence and believes that Ashley is the real killer.
What the fuck? Are you joking?
I know. She said, quote, Ashley had ample time, ample opportunity.
As did Stacey.
Mm-hmm. An ABC 2020 special about Stacey's crimes and trial aired in April 2009. And in it, Stacey continued to claim that she was innocent. At one point, she insisted that Ashley knows what really happened, saying, quote, Ashley brought this on. In the program, forensic psychologist Dr. James Knoll spoke about the case, specifically talking about the suicide note that Ashley allegedly wrote, according to only Stacey.
Yeah.
Dr. Knoll explained that most suicide notes focus on remorse, but this one was mainly focused on taking the blame off of Stacey, a theme that was repeated 14 times within the note.
What in the world? This woman. Oh my gosh.
I know. Dr. Knoll also said that if Stacey is indeed guilty of the crime she's convicted of, quote, then she would be demonstrating psychopathic traits, including regarding her own children as an object to be used for her convenience.
Yep. That was what I was about to say a minute ago, was that she's maintaining her innocence and the fact that she has convinced her own mother that she's innocent. That is like some serious like psychopathy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Yeah.
There is also suspicion that Stacey may have murdered her own father, Jerry Daniels, in February 2002.
What?
So this is like very vague suspicion, but reportedly he was in the hospital for a minor issue with his lungs, and Stacey visited him and brought into his room an open can of soda for him to drink. And after that, he passed away. And the motive was that she was the executor of his estate. So again, money.
Hmm.
Obviously, there's no proof of this. It's just theory, but many do believe it to be true, including Michael Wallace's family. In 2011, David Castor's son from his first marriage, David Jr., along with his mother, Janice Poissant, sued Stacey Castor for what was left of David's $300,000 estate.
It probably wasn't much left.
No. But after a trial at the state Supreme Court, they were awarded over $127,000 in compensatory damages and $250,000 in punitive damages.
Okay. I mean, it's not, at least it's something. It's not enough to bring your family member back, but it's something.
Yeah. On June 11th, 2016, Stacey Castor was found dead in her cell at the Bedford Hills Correctional Facility for Women in Bedford Hills, New York. Her cause of death was a heart attack, and there was no evidence of suicide or foul play. She was 48 years old.
Dang.
A Lifetime movie was made about her called Poisoned Love, The Stacey Castor Story, and it aired on February 1st, 2020. So if you wish to watch that, that is what it's called. But that is the story of the poisoning crimes of Stacey Castor. And antifreeze poisoning is still used by killers to this day.
Mm-hmm.
Including a recent story that hit the news just a couple weeks ago.
I feel like there was like 4 poisoning cases.
There have been, yeah,
uncovered in the last like couple of weeks.
There have been a lot. So this one is the death of Stephen Riley. So just 2 weeks ago, a woman named Ina Kanoyer was charged with murder in relation to the death of her boyfriend of 10 years, Stephen Riley. So on September 4th, 2023, Ina Kanoyer called 911 to report that her boyfriend was not responsive. He was taken to the hospital, but the next day he passed away. Initially, Kanoyer told authorities that Stephen had suffered heat stroke, but his autopsy revealed that he had died of poisoning from antifreeze. According to friends and family of Stephen's, Kanoyer had previously made comments about poisoning him with antifreeze, so they were immediately suspicious.
What?
And reportedly, Stephen was set to receive a large inheritance, around $30 million,
Holy shit.
He had planned to leave Kanoyer once he claimed it. So that was the motive.
And she thought she was going to get it.
Mm-hmm.
Even though they weren't married and...
No. On the evening of September 3rd, Stephen went to the airport to meet with a lawyer to finalize the receipt of his inheritance. And with him was Ina and some of their other friends, who later said that while they were there, Stephen suddenly began to feel ill, complaining that he felt drunk, even though he had not had any alcohol.
Okay, he reported similar. Is a PSA for you guys. If you start feeling drunk for no reason, go to the hospital because you may have been poisoned.
Yes.
Damn.
Very good point.
Yeah.
He reported stomach pain and nearly collapsed, and the friends wanted him to seek medical attention, but Ina was adamant that he was just suffering heat stroke.
Even still, you should seek medical attention. You died from heat stroke.
Seriously. So Kanoyer told investigators that Stephen had been drinking alcohol all day on September 3rd and that he had suffered heat stroke the day before, so all of that together is what led to his death. But a statement from a friend who was with Stephen the day before contradicted this, saying he never suffered heat stroke. And the toxicology report revealed that Stephen had no alcohol in his system.
Wow.
Also, on the day that Stephen was hospitalized, one of Ina's friends saw her dump his belongings outside their home. The friend said that Ina was upset because Stephen was going to get this inheritance and leave her, so that's why she did it, but clearly there was another motive.
That's so stupid. I don't understand what people, like, you're gonna get caught.
You're going to get caught.
There's nothing you can do, especially now when they have so many tests.
It's so obvious. There's so many things that can point to it. So no. Inside the couple's home, investigators found a Windex cleaner bottle with green liquid inside, believed to be antifreeze. They also found a glass Coors Light beer bottle and a plastic mug in the garage, both suspected of containing antifreeze. Kanoyer claimed that Stephen may have accidentally ingested the antifreeze by, quote, smoking a cigarette that may have fallen in antifreeze in the garage.
Okay, well, first of all, if a cigarette falls into a wet substance, I don't know if you guys know this, but chances are it's not going to light. And even if it, like, dried out.
There's not going to be enough antifreeze on there to kill you.
No.
Ultimately, Ina Kanoyer has been charged with murder for the poisoning death of Stephen Riley. And her first court appearance is set for December 1st, 2023. And she is maintaining her innocence. The saddest part of this story, the inheritance that Stephen was going to receive, was a scam. He had been scammed into thinking he was going to receive this massive amount of money, and that was Ina's motive for murdering him, and it wasn't even true.
Wait, how are you scammed in an inheritance? Is it an inheritance from someone in your family or, like, someone that you know?
I think so. So
I guess you get a...
Yeah, because this is, like, a new
ongoing
case, not a ton of details about, like, the scam have been released, but they have called the money he was going to receive an inheritance, and now they're saying it's a scam. So it's unclear, like, exactly what happened, but
it makes me wonder, and this is speculatory obviously, but like, I know I got a text, and I know a couple other people got a text when the like Mega Ball or whatever Powerball winner, and it was like, oh, this is so and so who won the $98 billion, and I'm here to you got randomly selected as one for of the some 20 of it, people yeah. for $30,000 or whatever, $25,000. And I was like, oh, yay me. Yeah. Lucky me. But like, people really fall for that.
They do. Yeah.
It's so sad.
I know.
Don't ever give anybody your bank information, anything. Your social security number, your address, nothing.
Yeah. Nothing.
Say, mail me a check to the post office and I'll go pick it up there.
Yeah, exactly. So while antifreeze poisoning may maybe seem like a good way to kill someone, it's not. It's pretty obvious in toxicology reports. So just don't do it. Okay.
Yeah. If you want to make a lot of money, like go sell pictures of your feet or something. Yeah, or go to OnlyFans or
there's
something.
There's way to
like,
make money. Don't.
Yeah. Like don't
kill somebody to get their inheritance or their
some kind of
estate.
Inheritance or yeah. yeah. Or life insurance or yeah. whatever.
Just like, don't. That's the other thing.
Loved ones. Like you're supposed to love these people.
Yeah. And what? The other thing is life insurance. Like if you get a life insurance payout, there's immediately an investigation.
Oh, yeah.
So. Come on. Michael Wallace was the life of the party and was always willing to help others. David Castor was a hardworking, adventurous man. Both men met a horrible fate thanks to their evil wife, the Black Widow. But that's all I have for you guys today. Thank you for listening, for being here, and until next time, keep it human.
Bye, guys.